Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 1st, 2018. A South Sudanese national receives an award for promoting peace education.
The only thing that I'm doing at my level is actually advocating for the American community or the American government to actually put pressure. And then I'm also advocating for the numbers of refugees to be accepted into the United States and making sure that South Sudanese refugees are added into that.
And the UN General Assembly talks about the participation of young people in decision-making process.
What we do is to build their capacity, support them with small initiatives in their communities, advocacy, community mobilization, sensitivity, gender issues, whatever they want to do, we are supporting them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Refugee Agency welcomes South Sudan's decision to consent to the 1951 Convention on the Status of Refugees and its 1967 Protocol. President Salva Kiir signed the consent in Juba on Friday after it was ratified by the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. South Sudan is number 143rd country to consent to both the 1951 Convention on Refugees and its 1967 Protocol. A South Sudanese refugee who came to the United States was awarded over the weekend for promoting peace among South Sudanese in the diaspora. Nyamal Tudel says South Sudan needs peace at all costs, and she is ready to be part of the search for peace.
I was a bit excited, and then at the same time, too, with personal growth, I was a little bit questioning myself, really, am I a peacemaker? Because what I do, I feel, is just my daily mission. I didn't feel that it was something to be acknowledged, but as my former director to the program that nominated me brought up to me, it was like, well, you are actually doing peace-building work, and that is something that you ought to commend yourself for because it is seen not only by the university but also with your cohorts and everybody else in the field.
Tell me a little bit about what you do here in the United States that attracted the attention of peace educators and they developed interest in you.
So here in the United States, I was involved in an early age before we got our independence in the SBLM. I was involved with the Women League and the Youth League. And then from there, I working with the Youth League while we were going through our referendum, I was able to host numerous events, and I even hosted the Independence Day celebration in Nebraska, in Omaha, Nebraska. And when we got our independence and then went into our own crisis, that's when I kicked in my advocacy mode and really started advocating for peace and resources, and then also speaking against the atrocities that are happening because mostly women and children are the one being affected. So I was able to advocate on Capitol Hill for migrants and refugees through LIRS, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, as one of their former refugee leader.
People listening to us down home would say, wait a minute, Nyamal should be in Juba or in Malakal or in Wau, talking to the leaders of the warring parties who have taken so long to agree on the way forward in South Sudan. Why are you not there?
Well, I'm planning to be there. The reason why I'm not there currently is I just finished my master's in international peace and conflict resolution. So I was obtaining those resources so that I can implement them at home. I'm also working on my nonprofit, the Nya Eden Foundation, and we're currently working on taking our first mission to the refugee camps in Gambela to take menstrual kits to the young women there.
Talk to me a little bit about your nonprofit foundation. What does it do, and what are you doing for refugees in Gambela? You just said something about that.
So this nonprofit, it came from an idea, especially.
And what is it called? Could you bring us up to speed on it?
Yeah, it's called Nya Eden. In the newer language, Nyal means a girl, and then Eden, it could be taken in the biblical context, a garden of peace. So we just put the two words together, Eden Foundation, and we are empowering women through education, peace building, conflict resolution, and self-sufficiency.
With this award that you've been given, and, you know, your name is out there now, flying as, you know, one of peace educators in South Sudan. Mm-hmm. If you're given an opportunity to meet Dr. Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir, what would you tell them?
I'm a frank person, and I'm very honest. I really don't sugarcoat anything because I don't have an agenda. My agenda is for the women and children to not have to suffer because, again, growing up in a refugee camp, being born in a refugee camp, and having to be displaced of my own home, I would frankly just let them know that they need to put their ego aside. Because ultimately, South Sudanese themselves, we are loving and peaceful people. It's just that they have used their personal agendas against one another. And, you know, the infamous African proverb, when two elephants fight, it's the grass that get hurt. And this grass right now is the women, the children, the disabled, and the elderly that are getting hurt, while the men are pretty much playing their game.
Do you see this recently signed revitalized peace agreement as one way of resolving the conflict in South Sudan?
No, I don't see it because it's just a piece of signature. It's not tangible. There is no actual relief. People can sign the paper and talk about it, but they're not implementing it. It's not being put in action, so I really don't see it. And how many times has this piece of paper been signed? And are people are the third largest population of refugee in the world now, with the first being Syrians. So to me, this is still another piece of paper.
And what are you doing to make what you're calling piece of paper to be sustainable and implemented?
Me being in the diaspora, the only thing that I'm doing at my level is actually advocating for the American community or the American government to actually put pressure. And then I'm also advocating for the numbers of refugees to be accepted into the United States and making sure that South Sudanese refugees are added into that population.
That's Nyamal Tudel, a South Sudanese national who received an award for promoting peace education this weekend. Nyamal was awarded by the Peace and Justice Studies Association, a group that promotes peace education around the world. As the 73rd UN General Assembly meets in New York, its Sustainable Development Goals continue to be key to its mission. The global group Women Deliver contributes to those efforts with its Young Leaders Program. Since its inception in 2010, it has helped over 700 youth advocates for girls and women around the world build and strengthen their skills. VOA's Adams Phillip spoke with two African young leaders Women Deliver invited to New York in connection with the U.S. General Assembly and its satellite events.
She wanna be a star, she wanna charge the sky, she wanna walk a little harder to be a number one.
That's the pop singer turned Women Deliver young leader William Otok of Tanzania singing his song Girls on YouTube.
This song that I did talks about giving girls access to education and contraceptives so that they can stay girls and not mamas when they're not ready.
Today, Otok works with the International Youth Alliance for Family Planning, a network for young people.
What we do is to build their capacity, support them with small initiatives in their communities, advocacy, community mobilization, sensitivity, gender issues, whatever they want to do, we are supporting them.
What is your actual work involved in a concrete level?
It's a lot of things. Policy dialogues with the government and policymakers, trying to like engage them and see how we can change policies, improve policies and programs that we can reach a lot of young people.
The group's work firmly aligns with several of the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, which include good health and well-being.
Our aim is to make sure that young people and women and everybody in general stay healthy.
Otok asserts that for youth, staying healthy also means being informed about sexuality and reproduction.
Young girls, they don't have enough information because sex is a taboo in most of our communities. People don't want to talk about sex openly, and so we see a lot of teenage pregnancies, we see a lot of unsafe abortions, we see a lot of gender-based violence, things like this. So our work is to empower people. And by doing that, we're not telling people abstain. we're telling people, do whatever you want to do, but you have to be informed to make the right choices. By empowering women with information and the power to make decisions on their own bodies, we're just giving them power. And once you give them power, then we can realize gender equality.
At 29, Women Deliver youth leader Dr. Juani Bewa already holds a medical degree, a master's degree in public health, and is on track for a PhD. Bewa also teaches rural girls in her native Benin.
We talk about menstruation, how to take care of themselves as young girls, as young women, but also we talk about sexual intercourse and how to use a condom.
There must be a lot of laughs during that.
There are a lot of laughs, but a lot of interest because they want to understand.
Dr. Bewa is accustomed to the public spotlight. However, her activism stems from a deeply personal experience. When she and her friend were 12, her friend became pregnant, then died from an illegal abortion.
So at this moment, I start thinking about how can I just a little bit start to contribute to improve awareness. And after that, advocacy, and after that, bringing my work into the policy level.
In 2010, Bewa founded the Young Beninese Leaders Association, or YBLA.
It started with a march, a simple march with 300 people, and it became a big campaign throughout the world.
Recently, YBLA received a grant from the First Lady Michelle Obama Young African Women's Leaders Small Grant Program. Bewa parlayed the money into an education and advocacy effort that has touched the lives of some 3,000 girls in Benin. Bewa is proud to say that hers is a progressive country, open to change.
But I think we need to do more to make sure that there are more spaces and opportunities in Africa to support young women who are willing to put themselves out there. We have ideas and initiatives, but how do we sustain that? It requires a strong support system. Young people are passionate to push the UN agenda and to advocate for what is meaningful for us.
The work continues, as it must, according to Women Deliver CEO Katya Iverson, who adds, young leaders are not only the leaders of tomorrow, they are the leaders of today. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
She says she wants to fight, she says she wants to run, she says she wants to leave.
The Sudanese Foreign Minister, Aldridiri Mohamed Ahmed, sat down with VOA's Greta Van Susteren over the weekend to talk about U.S.-Sudan relations and his country and what his country is doing after U.S. lifted sanctions 1 year ago. The minister says the impact of lifting the sanctions has been minimal.
Well, we're having so much issues in common nowadays. For instance, we have started a peace process in South Sudan, which was the subject of continuous consultation between us and the United States of America. We're also about now to start a new peace initiative in CAR, the neighboring CAR. That's also a matter that we used to discuss together. Also now the peace process in Sudan would start so soon and would move into the transition period in which we are taking a very instrumental role that is the guarantors for peace, and this requires some measures to be taken within the UN Security Council, and we would love to see to it that the United States supports the role that Sudan will play in South Sudan. So there are so many issues to discuss with the UN Deputy Secretary of State.
Well, Sudan is on the United States list of state sponsor of terrorism, right?
Indeed.
Is that something you spoke with the deputy about?
Oh, yeah. There is an initiative by the United States to start the engagement with respect to this matter, and we're discussing this as well.
President Trump lifted some sanctions on your country some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the impact?
In fact, very minimal, simply because the economic sanctions that were lifted, even if they were lifted on paper, but in effect, they were there because we are still in the list of the states sponsoring terrorism, and that affects us negatively and makes it sometimes impossible for us to even make the slightest of banking transfers to different places of the world. And this, of course, affects still our ability also to attract investment and capital to Sudan.
You understand why the Sudan is on the U.S. list, right?
We don't.
You do not?
No.
Let me give you some suggestions. Part of it is that, for instance, Osama bin Laden was given refuge there, given an opportunity to live there for some time. There's also been indications that there have been terrorism cells in Sudan that have been given comfort.
Well, Osama bin Laden, when he was in Sudan, that was way before he established Al-Qaeda. That was way before he went to Afghanistan. And Osama bin Laden had lived all over the place, in so many countries, the U.S. included. I don't know why, in particular, Sudan is singled out to be punished for the short stay of Osama bin Laden in it, whereas so many other countries in which Osama bin Laden had lived and had taken them, for some time as home or refuge, were not at all penalized.
What's been the impact of the indictment of President Bashir on Sudan?
Of course, at the beginning, some thought that the indictment of President Bashir would affect Sudan negatively in so many aspects. But this has not been the case because the support that we have received from the African Union and because also of the support that we received from the international community at large. President Bashir is almost right now moving freely to most of the countries of the world, maybe of quite a few countries in Europe and here in Northern America. Maybe are not giving President Bashir visas, but other than that, President Bashir is moving freely. If Sudan is affected because of anything, it's affected by the multilateral measures that were imposed on it because of what has taken place in Darfur, and also by the unilateral measures, in particular taken by the United States of America. But the status of President Bashir as an indictee of the ICC had, in fact, affected Sudan very little and had, in fact, also drawn very little attention by so many of the countries, particularly in Africa.
That was Al-Didiri Mohamed Ahmed, the Sudanese foreign minister, speaking with VOA's Greta Van Susteren at the United Nations headquarters in New York over the weekend. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, officials in Jonglei State want the men and women in uniform to pay tax. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what foreign language would you like to be fluent in and why?
French. It sounds really interesting anytime I listen to it, and it seems to me as one of the languages that is gaining international ground.
I'd like to be fluent in Arabic because I'm Muslim, and I'd love to be fluent in Spanish. I just love it. Because I love salsa, and I'd love to understand the music. Though I like it, I would love to understand.
The foreign language I want to be fluent in is English, because English is an international language. It's been spoken all over the world now. It is used in offices almost everywhere, even we are in school, because of English and Arabic.
I like to be fluent in German because I have ambitions and hopes of visiting Germany, staying there and making it my home. So I would like to be very fluent in it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The Jonglei State Finance Minister is accusing the organized forces, including police, army, and the wildlife service, for not paying their personal income taxes. James Akech Ayen says the National Ministry of Finance has ordered all organized forces in the country to pay personal income taxes. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Minister Yen says organized forces in the state have been avoiding paying personal income taxes for nearly 2 years, denying the state government of millions of South Sudanese pounds.
We use personal income tax, PIT, only from the civil servants because organized forces decided not to work with the states. They have taken their account direct and they take their salary direct. They don't pass through state and they don't pay PIT to the state. So we only have civil servants, PIT.
Yen says each member of the organized forces is supposed to pay 15% of his or her salary in income tax each month. He says his ministry used to automatically deduct taxes from the salaries of police, fire brigade, prison, and wildlife officers. But he says last year, majority of the members of the organized forces decided to open bank account so they could receive their salaries directly from the national government.
In accordance with the law, they are supposed to pay personal income tax to the state government. We used to go to them to get their personal income tax, but they give us what they want to give. They don't give us the parade. And when you talk much, they say, no, we don't get services from you. You should not even come here.
Yan says tax evasion has pushed Jonglei State to the financial limit in funding health, security and roads projects.
We are now stuck because of that. We are now stuck in Chapter 1. And Chapter 1, no services. It is a salary. And you know that we stay 7 months, 6 months. And then when the salary comes, it will come 1 month. And then you wait.
Jonglei Police Captain David Ball says the personal income tax is being deducted from his salary each month, but says he has no idea what it is used for or where it is deducted.
Personal income tax, it is always deducted in my salaries in every month. So VAT is already there deducted. It is authority of the interior. Who know the way how it will use, but we don't have comment on that because we don't follow it.
Police officer Philip Ayuen says the PIT is always taken from his salaries. Speaking in Arabic, Ayuen says he too has no idea how the personal income tax is used.
The VAT tax is being taken from my salary in every month, but what is used for, I don't know. I don't know its beginnings and its end.
State officials say they are planning to find a way of automatically deducting taxes from the salaries of organized forces, since most of them do not pay their taxes. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng, reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we move to Geneva, where the UN Refugee Agency warns increasing numbers of people are fleeing conflict and persecution around the world at a time when more and more countries are closing their doors to the millions in need of international protection. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
This film shows a group of refugee children playing together, learning together. But according to statistics, the outlook for their future and the possibility that they will one day return to their homes is not very promising. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says global displacement was at record levels when he took office in January 2016. He says the number of displaced has since increased to 68.5 million, more than 25 million of them refugees. He says displacement crises affect nearly every region of the world, the Middle East, Africa, Central America, Asia, and even in Europe, in Ukraine. He says new crises with harrowing consequences are erupting, with the mass exodus of more than 700,000 Rohingya from Myanmar being a notable example. The High Commissioner tells delegates at the conference that neighboring countries largely have kept their borders open to refugees, though some have not. He notes most of the burden falls upon poor developing countries that host 84% of the world's refugees.
Yet, further afield, often in rich countries, the trend is towards making it difficult for people to seek asylum, even by closing borders and pushing people away. Children separated from their parents, leaving psychological scars that will last a lifetime. Refugees dehumanized, treated as a commodity, passed from one state to another.
Grandi says it is becoming increasingly more difficult to ask poor countries to keep their doors open to refugees when some of the world's richest countries are closing theirs. He says paths to solutions are becoming more complicated, but he says a few examples provide a glimmer of hope. He hopes the recent peace accord between Eritrea and Ethiopia will help solve the displacement crisis in the Horn of Africa. He notes the revitalized peace agreement in South Sudan, where more than 4 million people have been displaced since a civil war began in 2013. Grandi is also urging countries to recommit to accepting some of the world's most vulnerable and persecuted people for resettlement. He calls resettlement a limited but important solution toward easing the global refugee crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Right groups are calling on the government of Cameroon to bring back home thousands of its citizens said to be trapped in a slave-like working conditions in Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. The call became stronger after a video circulated on social media with some of the girls saying they are starving and sick. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Samuel Eto'o, si tu es au courant de cette vidéo, il faut nous aider.
In a video circulated online, a Cameroonian woman in her 20s calls on the country's football star Samuel Eto'o to help free her and 13 other women from a town in Kuwait. She says she does not know the name of the town, but says they work round the clock, do not eat well, and are beaten daily by people who call themselves their masters. The video shows the unidentified woman on a mattress on the floor, surrounded by other Cameroonian women who are sleeping. She says they were hired to work as housekeepers and hotel receptionists, but were forced to work months without pay. Some faced sexual exploitation. After widespread outrage in Cameroon, a spokesman for the Ministry of External Relations said the migrant workers had been rescued. He said they were under the care of the Department of Social Affairs of Kuwait. But Roger Tolum, who heads the civil society group Table de la Vérité, the Table of Truth, says he spoke to the women on Sunday and they described themselves as being detained in poor conditions.
Il faut faire quelque chose. Monsieur le Président de la République, voici un cas précis.
He says Cameroon President Paul Biya should immediately help the girls and women and punish his ministers who deceived him last week by claiming they had negotiated for the migrants to return. He says all candidates for the October 7 presidential election in Cameroon should urge the government to bring back the girls and make it a point of duty to educate people to stop sending their children to Kuwait, Lebanon, and Saudi Arabia. Lydie Esesimba deals with exploited migrant workers at Cameroon's Ministry of Social Affairs. She denies the ministry has abandoned the women in Kuwait and says Cameroon's embassy in Saudi Arabia is negotiating their return.
Pour le cas de l'année 2017 à 2018, il y a eu 1300.
She says between 2017 and 2018, the government of Cameroon, the International Organization for Migration, and the European Union returned home 1,322 migrants. When they arrive in Cameroon, the government gives them psychological treatment because many are traumatized from torture.
That report by Kinzeka in Yaoundé brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Kelele by Hardlife Avenue. I've been listening to Hardlife Avenue with the song Kelele. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mm-hmm.